Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. Welcome to Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center, and I'm happy to introduce co-host Senator Dan McKay on the right.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Hi, Natalie.
And our other co-host, Shireen Gourbani, on the left.
Hello. Hey, listeners. Thanks for tuning in.
Dan and Shireen, I want to jump in and talk about the filibuster, just as something to talk about to begin the program today. It's become something of great interest to me. I'm one of those that loves the political middle. People have felt that the filibuster for so long protects the middle because it requires compromise, right, to get to that 60%, two-thirds, whatever it is. But as I've read and learned more about it, I've started to realize that we're like one of the only major democracies, or the only, that requires super majorities for routine business in the legislative branch. It seems to be particularly crippling to our country right now. And I'm just reading all these things in The Economist and hearing on the BBC, people that look at us from the outside, and they're really worried about democracy in America, Shireen.
Yeah, I'm worried about democracy in America, too. And this is something that we saw even, you know, under the Trump administration. Our Senate is where ideas, initiatives, bills go to die. Not much is happening there. It's, supposed to be, what's that phrase, the like cooling saucer of government. But what it in fact is a graveyard. And we need to see action from our government, especially on things where most Americans agree, infrastructure investments, thinking about just basic things that most Americans would like to see their government do. It's not getting done.
Yeah. Dan, I read, this was like in the March 2021 issue of The Economist magazine, but they said something to the effect that the United States is no longer viewed as the beacon of democracy it once was. That troubles me.
Who said this?
This is in The Economist magazine.
Oh, come
but,
on.
You know, they
I
support
believe you're
it.
A fan.
They support it with a lot of data that they even show that the filibuster was a result of a genuine error, that they didn't know how to shut down debate. They didn't have specific procedures for shutting down debate. So it evolved over time from that, but it wasn't like some purposeful thing.
Well, the fact that it goes back to like Aaron Burr and, you know, his whole, he had just freshly been indicted as vice president of the United States, indicted for the murder of Hamilton at the time. You might say that it comes from interesting roots. The filibuster itself, I do love the idea that one group, you know, one party control on all forms of government, they have to compromise and they have to find solutions. But let's not forget what the Senate's primary purpose was in the design of the founders. The design of the founders for the Senate was for the Senate to be the protector of states, you know, states' interests and states' rights. That's why it's balanced across all the states and not based on population. And so while it does become the tepid cooling cesspool of whatever, metaphor Shireen likes at the moment on the Senate and the killing floor, or wherever
like graveyard.
It might be. Yeah, there you go. Graveyard. I would just say, primarily when Washington does quote nothing, right? What it does is it leaves options to the states to implement their ideas and work within the state's ideas and state's realm. And I would say 9 times out of 10, the solutions are far better dealt with at a state and local level rather than dealt with at the national level where, you know, their solutions tend to be draconian and too blunt of an instrument.
So Dan, you've made this argument before. Why don't we just have a part-time legislature in the federal government? You'd probably like that. And let's bring Senator Romney and Senator Lee and our congressional delegation home and let's have them help us with homeless services and housing affordability, all these things we need help with here in the state. Because if they're not doing anything important, why do we have them back there?
Well, I mean, that's an even better question. The founders never intended for them to be a full-time legislature, so I would probably think they would agree with you. And I like to see you returning to the founders' roots, Natalie. No, I'm just kidding. So I most of the time I would agree that, you know, everybody says, maybe bring them home or that kind of thing. Remember Ted Cruz got in trouble for being on vacation, right, during the great power outage of the freeze in Texas. And I'd say, like, honestly, I want them to like be out of the limelight. Let's let them be part timers. I'm fine with that. But they can only cause problems.
Yeah. Shireen, I wonder, I know, you know, you've got a perspective here, but what I would love to see is that we use the filibuster so a supermajority in rare circumstances, like when you've got an impeachment, a presidential veto, constitutional amendments, ratifying of treaties. But routine business, let's just go with majority.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. And I think we would also see that the way in which any decisions, it seems like, have just been hyper dialed up through a partisan lens, it might go away. It might actually be easier for people who would like to see across party lines some of this legislation move forward to be able to make those votes in a less volatile environment.
Yeah. But it just depends on how you define, you know, routine. Let's talk about the Trump presidency for a minute. Some could say that based on the number of impeachments in the United States, that impeachment in the Trump administration was really quite routine.
I heard where you were going there, Dan. Hey, Dan, you're a clever lawmaker, right? If our listeners don't know that, just look into Dan's background a little bit more. But it seems to me that one way you could break through on this is to have a change in this rule, but have a sunset on it. So you do it for 8 years, 4 years, I don't know, something that crosses over a presidential election, and then reassess it. Just
well,
a thought.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong with, you know, with that solution. I think what everybody has to realize is I know that Chuck Schumer, I know that all Nancy Pelosi, everybody recognizes this. And while they want to rail against the filibuster because it's standing in the way of an agenda right now, what they don't want is in the beginning of the Trump administration when he had both sides. They do not, and this is what is constantly on DC's mind. You have to be prepared to govern as though you're the minority, even when you're in the majority, as far as the rules and how you change the rules. And that is the danger of making one-sided changes like that. And the sunset may be a clever way to do it, Natalie. I just don't know that they can get a consensus to get there.
Mm-hmm. Shireen, let's jump to the 2021 Summer Games in Japan. This is a topic of interest, right? They delayed the games 1 year. We're in Olympic City here in Salt Lake. But the scientists are kind of saying, you know, we don't think you should do this. And that's got to be such bad news to the organizing committee in Tokyo or whichever part of Japan this is.
Well, there's a real concern. And, you know, we've largely stopped talking about COVID news on this podcast. But the reality is the world is really behind us when it comes to vaccinations. Here in the state, we're doing pretty well. If you haven't gotten your shot yet, I hope you'll consider doing it. But we've got a real situation in Tokyo where they're very concerned about what is going to happen when people from all over the world converge on the city, even though it's in a bubble. And health professionals in Japan are warning that it could really create a troubling situation for the variants and strains coming together. And it doesn't sound like Japan is really anywhere near the level of vaccination that they need to be. Mm.
Yeah. Dan, do you have comment on this?
Well, I think we have shown in the United States that there are ways to host the games that would be safe for people to engage in that kind of thing. And I don't know, maybe it's me, but I think the game should continue and let's move forward. And there are going to be some risks. There were always some risks, though, in everything we do.
Yeah, that's certainly true.
And you're talking about a low-risk group of athletes who are in the prime of their health and life, who have trained for generation to get here. Like, I don't know.
No, to be clear, I'd like to see it go forward as well. The concern that I have is that even the medical professionals there are saying that they're not demonstrating the same level of care and concern that we have seen in some of the sporting events that we saw take place here in the United States. So it sounds like there are protocols or steps that could be changed to make it safer for the athletes and for those coming, but those aren't happening.
Hey, well, so speaking of COVID adjustments, how about the Utah Jazz being able to, I don't know how many it is, but it's several, is it 13,000, 14,000 fans have been able to be in the Vivint to watch the playoff games? But we made national news when a few Jazz fans, I think it was three Jazz fans, had some racist comments for Ja Morant's parents. I was sitting about three or four rows in front of this interaction. And I, you know, turned and could tell something was going on. And then I saw Ja in a timeout looking up. And, you know, you could tell it was something of interest. So I thought family, friends. Super disappointing. Love the way the Jazz handled it. And then Ryan Smith, to his credit, the majority owner of the Jazz, offered courtside seats to this week's game to Jaws' parents. Love to hear your comments, Dan and Shireen.
Oh, I was looking through, I was trying to find the actual comments because I didn't see a lot of what was said. My understanding that the racist comment was the use of the word boy or something like that when they were like making, you know, the comments that they did. It wasn't necessarily, you know, the hateful N-word or anything along those lines. I mean, obviously, you don't have to use that word to be racist. But, you know, look, we make news, I guess, out of this, but this is not something that's new, obviously, to Utah. I was reading an article yesterday and shows that these interactions between players and fans are actually increasing and escalating, and that we've had over the last 5 years a significant escalation in this type of confrontation between athletes, their parents, or their family members, and fans, and that kind of thing. And, you know, I would prefer to keep sports civil, fun, that kind of stuff, but I don't know, maybe it's just not possible, but for Utah's sake, we could do better.
So this happened on the heels of also an interaction that some Ballet West dancers had reported, you know, being confronted with racist comments in the street as well. I think that we do need to reckon with how, you know, Utahns maybe are reflecting in some cases a larger problem that we have in this country. And what I would say I think about all the time is this fight when I think it was still Ron Artest, when he was Ron Artest, and somebody got mad at him before he was mad at World Peace and threw, I believe, something at him as he was playing. And what I loved, of course, is that he like ultimately came and laid down on like a table that was a courtside. It was a really unbelievable fight if you've never seen it. But for somebody to feel like they are entitled to throw an object at a player is completely beyond what is acceptable. And it's just a sense of, I think, you know, I appreciate people's fandom. I like it when people get excited. There is an absolute line. And too many times recently in the NBA, we've seen that crossed.
I love, Dan, in a program where we're talking about public affairs, that Shireen has brought up Ron Artest and World Peace. We talk about world peace on this show, but it's not necessarily in that context always. Hey, stay tuned, listeners. In our next segment, we're going to talk about Pride Month.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Shireen Gorbani on the left.
Dan McKay on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle, and it is Pride Month. And Dan and Shireen, I want to hear your thoughts. Mayor Mendenhall put the flag up in Salt Lake City. This week, we commence a month of talking about rainbows and inclusion and love is love. And I think it's really a positive thing for our community. So I'd love to hear both of you comment about it briefly.
So Pride is a space that's always felt really close to home for me, a place that I've always wanted to, in North Dakota, where I grew up, it was a very different kind of scene than it is here in the city. But if people haven't had the chance to look at some of the events this week, I know if you're listening on Sunday, there's not going to be much time left. But downtown in Salt Lake City, there's a story garden where you can go and learn about our own city and state's history of the LGBTQ community. And there's lots to engage with and many important resources available online as well. So I hope people will participate.
Dan, I'm hoping that leaders of the LDS Church will go see that story garden. I just think it would be a really mind-opening kind of thing to do. I haven't been there myself, but I will go. But Dan, I wanted to ask you on the political side, Governor Spencer Cox, he signed a proclamation, and I understand he's the first governor to do that. I read the proclamation, thought it was very well written. But to me, there's sort of a bit of a tipping point going on here.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this before in the show where, you know, I have never seen a political issue shift so quickly, you know, in Utah, especially, you know, to have a leading majority party governor, you know, making the statements he's had. And we all kind of remember, you know, the famous speech, I think, that really put Spencer on the map. You know, and I can't remember, was that like at a Pride festival?
After the Pulse shooting.
Oh, yeah. That's right. And I just, you know, we've seen this kind of change coming about, and I think it's just more and more people are recognizing that really, you know, we can't, I don't know, the days of judging each other and trying to decide who gets to be who and who gets to marry and who does. I'm hopeful that that kind of conversation's behind us, and now we're focused on, you know, a problem, like, as opposed to things like, that's not a problem. What people decide to do and how they, you know, choose to live their lives who they choose to marry, who they love. And that stuff's, those decisions are behind us. And shunning people or doing that kind of stuff, I'm hopeful that those days are over. Mm-hmm. More inclusive Utah is always going to be good.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like we have a lot of agreement on that topic. Let's jump to the Senate race with Mike Lee, because we had former Representative Becky Edwards announce this week that she was going to challenge Mike Lee to be the senator representing Utah. This will be a year from November, but the elections for Senate start about a year and a half in advance, so she's right on track. And I will just say, there's a lot of things that Mike Lee does that I'm a big fan of, and I would point to the Social Capital Project as the best example of that. But I'm very excited for Washington, D.C. to get to know some great Utah women. And there's other women that I think will enter this race, but I'd like to see a competitive race, and I'd like to see some women have their say, and Becky's one of them.
I'll say the thing that surprised me was that we're already seeing attack mailers being sent out about her, which is deeply, curious, I would say. Is there a group that actually believes that Mike Lee is vulnerable? I would certainly hope he is. I find myself just so completely unrepresented usually by him. And I think that on the issues where I do find agreement with Senator Lee, that Becky Edwards would certainly be at the table fighting for those causes as well. So I would just like to know Dan's read on, you know, what the environment is. Is there a concern? And if so, how do we help Becky get elected?
Yeah, let's hear it, Dan, because I will say that those attack mailers that came from Club for Growth, that's my understanding, but there were two of them right on the day she announced, and then the day after she announced, that came to my household, and they were not substantive, right? They were sensationalized negative on this fine Utah legislator from Bountiful.
Okay, but I don't see anyone, and I'll have to go back and listen to our show, but you'll remember this is the exact thing that happened when Jim Matheson was facing Mia Love. They put out so much vitriol about, you know, and it was groups in the left who were calling Mia Love all kinds of things, and they just placed her into a corner, defined her before she had a chance to like introduce herself to the public. And it's just, you know, what I think what people miss is that federal races, whether they're in Utah, whether they're in Pennsylvania or Florida, it doesn't matter. They really aren't local races. They are federal races with federal issues, and federal groups get involved because they have interest, whatever they may be. And, you know, this is how elections are run in other states. And most of the time, when you've got a record that they can aim at, trust me, I've seen the hate stuff that people have planned to run. If I ever ran for office, I've seen the stuff for federal office or statewide office that people plan to say about me. And I can just tell you, all's fair in love and war. And, you know, I'm sure that Becky knew what she was getting into. And I, you know, the others who decide to jump in the race will probably be looking at that as well and thinking, well, is that something I want to get involved in? Mm-hmm. It's not easy, but it doesn't matter how you crunch it, though. Mike Lee will be your U.S. Senator for sure for the next 6 years. Starting next year.
I'm so disappointed in that for many reasons, but in particular, his recent vote to go the opposite way of our Senator Romney, to vote for some accountability and some understanding of what happened on January 6th. Of course, Mike Lee thinks that that's not a good idea. And frankly, I just don't think that he is reflective of where many Utahns are, which is largely in kind of the center right. He's far right. And I think a lot of his donors and supporters, the money behind him, would suggest that as well.
His quote for his vote, this is Senator Lee's quote, read like this. He said, "The commission the Democrats attempted to establish today contained broad investigative mandates, even to areas outside the events of January 6th, combined with broad subpoena power and a flawed structure constituting a recipe for a political witch hunt." So, Dan, that's Senator Lee's message. Senator Romney's essentially saying, hey, we need to get more information about this so we can have corrective action. The interesting thing to me...
Well,
go ahead, Dan.
Is there any issue that has been written more about in the last 6 months than January 6th? And I would say, some say, yeah, it's great. Let's look at it. Some would say, let's rehash it. Some would say, you know, we've heard enough. We know what we've done and we know what was done. Let's try and fix things. And the police are looking into things. FBI is looking into things. They're still making arrests. I would just say the federal government being focused on that as opposed to the other things that they could be focused on. I remember there were some on the left who were screaming Benghazi, Benghazi, and they're yelling at Jason Chaffetz for always talking about that. I promise you, January 6th will be no different very
mm-hmm.
soon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I mean, the difference is there was like an unbelievable, unprecedented attack on our Capitol. And I'm very concerned that the Republicans came together to agree to the pieces of that commission and then voted against it. Again, what we are seeing here is another example of the Senate being a place where just ideas go to die.
Listeners, go Google Wisconsin 2011 as the protests in 2011, where the Democrats and the unions completely stormed the Wisconsin legislature, took over the building. People were injured. It was a long list of terrible things that happened as a result of it. And the pearl clutching that is going on as a result of January 6th and nothing and almost no remembrance of 2011 in Wisconsin is shocking to me. But no, it shouldn't be because it's just politically motivated.
But I think what you've done
again
here is a really interesting both sides thing, right? And what you mentioned before is has there anything that's been talked about more than January 6th? The real answer to that is it depends on where you get your news. It depends on where you get your media. And for many people, there's a lot that simply hasn't been untangled, and it is something this country should never see again.
So I'm a big Senator Romney fan. I think listeners know that. He did receive this John F. Kennedy Profile and Courage Award. But one of the things he said upon receiving the award is that all of these, domestic squabbles, political squabbles, are diverting attention away from the three great challenges facing our country. And he references the rise of China, climate change, and the degradation of the nation's balance sheet. And I think Senator Romney is spot on. Like, I can let go of this commission if I knew that we were going to go take care of these problems. I just have no hope of that.
No, and the sad thing is, commission or no commission, no one wants to talk about any of those three things because they just want to thump the pulpit over it.
Yeah. Hey, well, this is troubling news locally. We had a 9-year-old Utah girl decide to drive to California with her 4-year-old sister so they could have a vacation at the beach. It was a freeway joyride, happened this week. They did crash. Gratefully, the young girls were not injured. They were both wearing seatbelts. But Shireen, what is this story?
So I do not know. This is the first I'm hearing of it, but give me some of the details. I need to know, was the 4-year-old in the back seat or did they both decide to ride up front? This is terrifying.
They left from West Jordan. I know that. Geez. They said they were headed to the beach. They were driving erratically and a guy in a semi tried to kind of, you know, intervene and help and ended up crashing with them. Does that sound right, Dan?
Yeah, that's about right. And so I just sum it up by saying, hey, any 9 or 5-year-old, if you want trips to the beach and your parents won't take you, right? Call Shireen. She is more than happy to take anybody to the beach.
But if you're small, you got to be in the back seat. I also feel like this is a good time to just touch on one other thing. As we are heading into summer, you know, it's really important. This, of course, is like a huge safety concern. But thinking about things like, you know, making sure that your family, if you're out on ATVs, if you're thinking about, you know, engaging in some summer activities and sports, please be safe with your family. There are lots of places across the state where you can get access to helmets or different safety materials. And I just would hope that everyone stays safe this summer. We've already seen some really unfortunate accidents just in this first few days. And those families are on my mind.
Yeah. We have about a minute and a half, just under a minute and a half left in the program. Dan, I'm going to go to you and then Shireen. But what are you thinking will define this summer in the news? What should our listeners be watching for?
Well, I'm just going to say, you know, my bill that passed last legislative session that, you know, created classifications of workers. We're actually seeing our first day of mandatory action where, you know, state workers are required to stay home if they aren't, you know, if they're able to telecommute. And so we're going to have our first bat air day because of, you know, a bunch of factors. And I'll just say, I'm excited and I'm really hoping that we'll be talking about, you know, industry taking up these types of standards.
That's a silver lining from COVID. Yeah, Shereen?
I'm going with Shot Girl Summer. I think people who have gotten vaccinated are really excited to get back out there. I'm thrilled about all the live music and events that we're seeing coming back. I hope that people are engaging in those activities safely as well.
And I'm going to go with diversify your outdoor recreation. Let the national parks kind of recover. They've got a lot of people coming from outside the state. Go and visit some of Utah's other national treasures, in particular our state parks, but a lot of our other federal lands. I'm Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. I've been joined by Dan McKay on the right, Shereen Gourbani on the left. Anthony Scoma produces the program. Thanks, everybody, for listening.